Session number 26947.
Mr. Jarvis, Real 2, we were talking about your training with the Air Training Corps mainly at East Ham, but before that Ilford, between 1941 and 1943. What uniform were you issued with in these early days for the Air Training Corps, if any?
Well, in the very early days, you had none at all, but within months, the usual blue uniforms with chromium buttons were issued, and they were continued even up to this day. Yeah.
So you had a full. Would you have to pay for that, or was that supplied?
Oh no, that was supplied by the government. Yeah.
Would it include boots and the rest of it, or was it just?
Oh no, it was a basic uniform and hat. Your own, the shoes, underclothes, etc. Obviously, was yours personally. Yes.
And what other training would you do in the early days on a drill? You'd have drill.
But then you moved into the flying, the ground school subjects, which you had to learn: navigation, meteorology, engines, radio, Morse code.
Tell us a bit about each of those. Navigation, I know it's a funny place to start, but how far did you go with navigation on the ground in
Well, we assumed we were going into aircrew, and therefore navigation was taught very similarly as in the Air Force. And we did plotting on maps. We use Dalton computers, and that seems strange.
Tell me what a Dalton computer is.
A Dalton computer is a glorified slide rule, a circular slide rule, which you calculated course and ground speed and air speed, wind speed and directions. All these factors had to be fed in, and then you were able to work out what course or what track you're going to fly.
Now, you start on navigation. What about meteorology, you mentioned?
Yeah, meteorology,
far did you go with that?
Well, we learned quite a lot. We learned the types of clouds, cloud formations, high pressure, low pressure systems, and generally the basics of meteorology that anyone learns. We learned an awful lot in the Air Training Corps. And in fact, it held me in very good stead when I went into the Air Force. Engines was another subject.
Now, how far did you go with engines?
We started with the Otto cycle principle, induction, compression, power, exhaust, which is the basics of engines. And then we stripped down engines and got to know how they worked, what the function was, because you then had to relate it to aircraft engines. Obviously, we were using ordinary motor engines at the time, but it gave us a good basic background for knowing how engines worked.
And any other subjects you recall?
Well, wireless. We had to learn about wireless, again, because used in aircraft. If you become a radio operator, I learned the Morse code. In fact, I was very competent at that. I became an instructor in Morse code to other cadets because I was able to do it to receive and to transmit very, very, very fast.
And how did they teach you the Morse code in the... You know, I mean, what method did they use?
Well, they use an ordinary Morse key where they would read out words or show you words which you had to transmit, and then you'd convert them into the Morse code and transmit them, and or listen to a receiver and listen to the word, the letters coming through, and then convert those into letters, symbols.
Now, what speed would you get up to yourself at this stage?
Well, I was doing between 20 and 25 words a minute, which was considered very good in the Air Training Corps. Yes.
Did some people just have a natural bent for Morse code, or was it possible for everybody to attain those
speeds?
Well,
no, not really. Most of them managed to struggle through learning the Morse code and able to transmit and receive up to 10 or 12 words a minute. That appeared to be about the average, but I found it so interesting, I was able to increase my speed up to that quite higher level.
And then became a trainer. Now, what about aircraft recognition? Did you do any of that?
Yes, we did aircraft recognition.
Tell us about that. How did they do it?
Well, they just gave us silhouette pictures of aircraft, Allied and German, and generally showed them on a projector at rapidly increasing speeds to see how quickly you could recognise them simply from silhouettes.
And how long would a session last on an evening? You'd get there about seven-ish.
Yes, and generally it was between 7 and 9, a couple of hours in actual fact, yeah.
And so you go there most nights.
That's right.
Now, what about other training things other than going? I mean, were there visits to aircraft at local airfields or?
Yes. Well, we did actually go to a local airfield in a particular Hornchurch, which is not terribly far away from East Ham. On odd occasions, we were taken to other airfields where we used to have flights. And that's the first time I ever flew in de Havilland Dragonfly, which is a biplane with two engines, but quite a big aeroplane, though.
And what do you remember of that first flight in the de Havilland?
Quite thrilled. Quite thrilled. It was all that I imagined what flying was going to be, and it simply stimulated my interest to eventually become involved in aircrew.
And would you get, was that a frequent occurrence, flights, or was that a bit of a one-off?
No, more or less. I won't say, probably a couple of times doing my ATC service, yeah.
Now, what else would you be doing at the RAF stations when you went there, Hornchurch or one of the others? What would you do, you know?
Just simply be shown around aircraft, talk to ground staff, maybe some of the pilots, who to us in those days were God, as you might imagine. I don't know whether you use that word. Yes.
And anything else? I mean, you got promotion. Tell us about the promotion.
Well, I progressively went through the ranks of the Air Training Corps, corporal, sergeant and flight sergeant, which was the highest rank an ATC boy could achieve.
Now, what did it mean being flight sergeant in the Air Training Corps? What were your responsibilities, powers, the rest of it?
Well, you had a group, a flight, which is part of the squadron. It comprised probably 20 to 25 other cadets. And then with the flights, I had a sergeant beneath me and a couple of corporals beneath them. And that comprised the administration. Then you had an officer who was a flight commander who you were directly responsible to.
And did you take to the responsibility? I mean, did you enjoy
Again,
it?
Yes. Again, the character forming of my independence and confidence in early years came to the fore, and it was very helpful. I had no problems accepting responsibility.
Anything else that you recall between, 41 and 43? You carried on working at the Harland and Wolff.
That's right.
You were living in Ilford.
That's
and
right.
Training most nights, most weekends with
That's
the
right.
air training.
That's
course.
Right. Yeah.
Anything else?
One little thing from a social angle. At Napier Road School, we had a dance every Saturday evening, and that is where I met my wife, who was a 13-year-old girl.
That's your current wife?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And,
yeah.
So that was important to you.
Oh, it was. Yes, absolutely.
Now, did you... what about being called up? I mean, were you going to volunteer or wait, or were you in restricted occupation as well?
No, I wasn't in reserve occupation, but I was waiting for the day when I was 17 and a quarter. That was the day that you're the first time you could be accepted for aircrew training.
And that's volunteering?
Volunteering for aircrew. All aircrew were volunteers during the war. No one was co-opted onto it. And that particular day, at 9 o'clock in the morning, I was outside the recruiting office at Romford, waiting for the office to open. The day I was 17 and a quarter. It would be it was April 1942, and that
now,
was the day.
What happened when you went in there? You were 17 and a quarter. What sort of an interview did you have?
Well, that was very limited. I simply indicated I wished to volunteer for aircrew. I was interviewed by an RAF officer who took all the necessary detail, particularly interested in my ATC experience. And he said I'd hear from them with regard to my application. Now, subsequent to that, about a week later, I had notification I had to go to Oxford University for 3 days for medical, educational and aptitude test to see whether I had the aptitude, etc., and was fit for aircrew.
So tell me about that, because those tests are of considerable interest. I don't know whether you remember what sort of things they were, both in every way, the medical, the education and aptitude. What were they?
Well, the medical naturally speak for themselves, but the standard required was very high, particularly with regard to vision, colour blindness, night vision, the general standard of health, obviously, that was essential. I can't really say much more about that. The educational side, well, a lot of it was covered by work which I'd done in the Air Training Corps, and I had very little difficulty in passing the examinations there. With regard to the aptitude tests, I had not met those before, but it was simply a case you had mock cockpits which you sat in with a series of lights and levers, and you had to coordinate when red lights come on and green lights went off, and it all to see whether you had the aptitude possibly to be a pilot.
That's what they were looking for.
Absolutely, yeah.
Now, how did you do in these tests? Were you aware of your success or failure?
Yes, you had an interview afterwards with a board of about five officers.
Was that at Oxford?
Oh, yes, at Oxford University, yeah. And they interviewed all candidates after the examinations, and they went through my HSC background, and eventually the chairman of the board said, well, I'm pleased to say you have been selected for pilot or observer training. Now, you may recall the observer was a category that preceded the navigator during the course of the war.
And this was exactly what you wanted.
Exactly what I wanted, yes.
And that was that would be about
April 1942. April 1942, yeah.
And what happened next then?
Well, I had to then wait to be called up. Indeed, it was the following April, a year later, that eventually I was called into the Air Force commence aircrew training.
Now, why the long wait? Was it frustrating? Did you know what was going on?
Oh, I realised a lot of people had applied for aircrew, and so therefore they could only take certain numbers. And I was actually 18 and a quarter when I actually joined up. I would have expected to join up when I was 18, but it wasn't to be. And so I accepted the fact when the due time came, I received the papers to join at the Aircrew Receiving Centre.
Now, was that what it was called? Where were you called up? What was the exact name?
Well, they called it ACRC, the Aircrew Receiving Centre, and it was at St John's Wood in London.
Now, whereabouts? Was it Lord's?
Near the Lord's Cricket Ground.
But it wasn't at Lord's?
Oh, no. It was in hotels that adjacent to Lord's and Regent's Park. That's where we were accommodated and where our induction took place, issuing uniforms, etc., having inoculations.
Well, let's take. What about the uniforms? What uniforms were you equipped with there? Because you'd get the full kit as well, I presume.
Oh, yeah, the whole shooting
match. Tell me what you got. Or as much as you remember.
Well, the basic RAF blue uniform and underclothes, shoes, kit bags, everything you needed, even button sticks for polishing buttons. And it's difficult to be precise, but it was everything you required as a serving airman.
And what about the inoculations? How many and what sort of effect did they have on you is, I think, more what we're into.
Unpleasant, I think. You had quite a lot, really. I was quite surprised. But it didn't upset me particularly. But I must admit, some fellows keeled over at the sight of the hypodermic syringe. And it psychologically, it did affect some people.
Some people but also had a bad reaction on their arms.
That is true. But I didn't have that. No.
It didn't happen to you?
No, not at all. No.
Anything else happened at the aircrew? Were you given any sort of briefings as to what would? I mean, did they in a sort of chart where you were going?
No, not really. They began the military induction of marching, going backwards and forwards to Regent's Park, to Lord's Cricket Ground. We did a little bit of ground school work there, but not a great deal. And we were only there for about 3 weeks. And then we were sent to our initial training wings, of which there were about six all over the country.
Now, which one was yours?
I went to Scarborough.
And did it have a number?
It did, but I'm afraid it escapes me.
And what was your reception when you arrived? It would still be, would it have edged into May by then, or would it still be April?
It would be the early part of May, yes. It ran about 3 weeks after I arrived at ECRC, yeah.
And what was your reception when you arrived at the initial training? Because this is, you know, your first real unit.
Oh, yes, that's where the military induction and a square bashing, as one people tend to call it, that's when it all started. But apart from that, the ground school subjects training would then be coming intensive.
Well, let's look at the sort of conditions. What accommodation did you have at Scarborough? What were you in, huts or?
No, it was in a hotel.
A hotel again.
Yeah, on the cliffs of Scarborough.
What were those hotel billets like? I mean, were
wonderful, excellent.
In what way?
Well, I mean, they weren't civilian standard a hotel, but hotels. All the main fittings had been removed, but you had the bare floorboards. You had the RF type beds with the three biscuit mattresses, but it was quite comfortable. Adequate sheets and blankets.
And how many to a room?
About six.
What about the food? I mean, this is one of your first experiences of RAF food. Mm. You'd had some at St. John's, but could you describe just the sort of food you were getting and the overall quality as far as you were concerned?
Well, generally on par with civilian life. It was different, the type of things we were fed. But as I recall, it was quite adequate and quite edible.
In what way was it different? If you see what I mean.
I think that the standards of rations we received were rather superior to what civilians got in those days. Strange as it may seem, but it was, yes.
And it was reasonably cooked
edible.
And presented.
Oh, it was, very much so. Very much so, yeah.
Now, what would a typical day be like at Scarborough? I mean, we'll use that to pick up the sort of various parts of the training. Cause
yeah.
You'd have sessions, wouldn't you?
That's right.
What about what time would you start the day?
Well, you'd start probably about 8:30. And then we had to march down to the sea level via paths down to the spa. That is a huge place, and to this day it still is, where concerts actually take place in there. And that was taken over by the RAF for ground school subjects. And we
tell us about the ground school subjects. I mean, they would be very similar, I would imagine, to what you'd already learned.
Exactly.
How far had your air training corps been an advantage to you? How much of the syllabus had you already covered?
Great.
How relevant was your training?
Well, it was great. The amount that we'd learnt in the HSC, and we had obtained proficiency certificates, which had taken up to quite a high level in the HSC, and therefore, as a result of that, when I went to the ITW, we went over the ground for quite a while, the ground that I'd already covered previously for a considerable time.
Now, would that give you an advantage over some of the other recruits?
Oh, yes, very much so, because many were never in the Air Training Corps and had to start from the word go. Well, obviously, that helped us, yeah. And that was with all the subjects.
And did it ever actually move beyond the air training? In other words, did you, I mean, it gave you a start.
Yes, right.
Was there a time when you were starting to move into the bits of the syllabus you hadn't done before?
Absolutely, because the syllabus took 12 weeks covering initial training, and we advanced with all the subjects to a much higher level than what we achieved in the Air Training Corps by the end of the 12 weeks. Yeah.
And the subjects were the same. So it was navigation, meteorology, engines, wireless, training, Morse code, aircraft recognition. That's the same subjects.
Well,
Nothing new.
there were hygiene and sanitation.
Well, tell us
That was
about.
a little bit. Well, I can't remember too much about it, but otherwise it was a question from a serviceman's point of view of ensuring you kept yourself clean all the time. I'm afraid with some people, with the homes I came from, they didn't maintain a particularly high standard.
How did they teach it? I mean, did they tell you what could happen?
Oh yes,
I
you
mean,
know
mice
what's
and things. I mean,
absolute. That is the sort of thing, unpleasant thing could happen if you didn't keep yourself clean and clean your teeth and simple things like that. A lot of people didn't, so it may seem, prior to coming in the Air Force.
did the men respond to this, the hygiene lessons? I mean, in other
Oh
words, did
yes,
people do what they were told?
oh they did, because they had it was peer pressure. Other people, the other cadets with them, and that they would ensure they did it, you know.
Now.
But there was no real difficulty because they all tended to blend together as a group and do what was necessary.
Now, so those are the ground lessons. Did you have any other lessons or training sessions? You drill, I think
We
we'd
did
take as
drills,
read.
that's right, yeah.
Anything, was there any fitness element, raising your standard of
Oh
fitness?
yes, we had PT virtually on a regular basis, and we were well, we used the beach at Scarborough quite a lot, the physical training
Now,
people.
what form did the physical training take? I mean,
Running, jumping, typical PT, going out, jumping over obstacles and things, all designed to make sure that your fitness increased as you're going forward as potential aircrew.
did they take on route marches or cross-country runs as well?
No, those I don't remember. No. It's simply physical training.
Now, I don't know whether from your tape there's not a particular element of sport in your life before.
That is true.
Did you find that the PT actually built you up and made you fitter and stronger?
Well, I certainly felt it. I don't think my weight varied, but I certainly felt much fitter doing that 12 week, that initial 12 weeks in the Air Force.
Anything else you did in those 12 weeks? I mean, was there any start to either to training, more as the sort of flying end of life, if you like?
Well, the only thing I can tell you is that we had a lot of clay pigeon shooting with shotguns, and that's leading into obviously aircraft gunnery.
That's where they started. So there's not you didn't start on a rifle range or small bore. You
Oh
started with a
yes,
shot.
no, we did. You refresh my memory. We did clay pigeon shooting, but we also did rifle range firing.
And how did you do it? But either
I
of
can't
these.
remember. It's a long time ago that I can't remember. I imagine it was adequate.
And so that nothing else, no other subjects.
No, they were basically it.
No flying lessons at all, of
Not at
course.
all. No.
Were you being assessed during this process? I
All
mean,
the
did you have
time.
a feeling you were being
All
monitored?
the time. You realise. Because remember, these people weren't only pilots or observers, there were other categories of aircrew who would be trained at the same time.
So the process was continuous. It wasn't a matter of exams at the end. You were constantly being monitored, were you?
We were, but there were exams at the end. There were, but you were being monitored all the way through. That is true.
And what were the exams like?
Well, I didn't find them very difficult. They weren't far removed from those which are taken with the proficiency examinations in the Air Training Corps.
So again, your air training corps have been valuable.
Tremendous.
Now, what about in the evening? You finish your day's training in the evening. Was there any sort of a concentration on what they call bull?
Yes, I know what you mean.
Preparing for kit inspections, cleaning your room. Can you talk a bit about that?
Well, only in the context that we had a white flash in our cap. It was a white material which indicated you were aircrew cadets as such, official, and you had white belts with brass fittings. Now, you had to ensure they were kept clean with white Blanco and brought and kept to a very high standard. All that was done during the course of this 13 weeks initial training, it was pure military induction.
But you didn't have sort of kit inspections of the whole of your kit where you'd have to buff your shoes up to an incredible.
Not to that extent.
It was fairly relaxed in
It
that
was
way.
indeed, yeah.
Now, how did you get on with your fellow recruits? Were they from the same sort of background as yourself? How did you fit in with them?
Was well, there some, any... yeah, some were, some weren't. Quite a number were ex-ATC boys, and therefore we had a lot in common with them. But others come straight in from civilian life, had nothing to do with the Air Force prior to it. And they more or less had to fit in with the bulk of us who had some form of military background.
With a big class divide between
people? Not really. I never noticed that at all.
So no. You felt similar.
All the same. All the same.
And was there any bullying or any trouble amongst the boys? It doesn't sound like it.
No, it doesn't. No, they were more gentlemanly.
Did you make any particular friends? Or
not particularly. No, I realised that we were only passing through different parts of our training, and you could depart from people very quickly and quite often. Really, yeah.
So it was just a general friendliness rather than particular pals.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, what about the instructors? What did you think of them? You'd had lots of experience of instructors. You'd even done some instructing.
Exactly.
What did you think of the standard and quality and methods of the RAF instructors?
Well, they were very, very good, I thought. They certainly knew their subjects extremely well, and they were very encouraging. The sense of bullying or intimidating never came into it. They intended to encourage you if you were falling behind or if you couldn't come to grips with any particular subject or aspect.
So it wasn't a shouting culture, a bullying culture?
Not at all. Even not like with a lot of the military, not at all.
Not
no.
Even with the PT instructors?
Oh, no, they would encourage you, but it wouldn't be in a bullying manner, not
so
at all, no.
It really was more encouragement than shouting?
Absolutely. That was the emphasis on encouragement. That is quite true.
Do you think you responded better to that than you would have done to, say, the classic army instructor?
I think we did, because we wanted to be in our crew. It was something we wanted, desperately wanted to do, and we'd volunteered to do. We weren't conscripted, yeah.
Now, what about the officers? Did you see, at this stage, have much contact with officers?
Well, there were only two or three there at the time. They're largely the commanding officer and those involved in administration, but we didn't have a great deal to do with them.
Now, any events you remember from that 3 months, any particular, anything funny or... or was it just...
Not really, it was just hard work.
And what? So then, that would take you to around about late July, early August, 43?
I would say around about mid to late August, 43, thereabouts.
So definitely a May start then.
Oh, yes, yes, oh, that's fine. And then we went on to a much more interesting aspect, because we were then sent to what the RAF called grading schools. And I went to a place near Leicester, RAF Braunston. And the idea was...
Do you know how to spell that? Sorry.
Braunstone, Braunston.
And that's near Leicester?
That's right, near Leicester.
And what was this unit called? Or was it just called a grading school?
It was called a grading school, that is all.
No number?
No. No, that none that I can remember.
And what happened when you got there? That would be August?
Yes. Well, the idea was that we would have 10 hours flying in a Tiger Moth to see whether we had the aptitude to be a pilot. That's the whole purpose of it, yeah.
Now, were you given any instruction on the Tiger Moth before you took off? Or was it given as a flight with an instructor?
You joined an instructor who immediately showed you the rudiments of the aircraft and then took you off with an appreciation flight. Then after that, they got down to the actual training side, showing you how to fly the aeroplane.
What would the appreciation flight concentrate on?
Well, just taking off flying around in local countryside, showing what happens when you move the ailerons and the rudder and the control column, see what was the effect of it. When you pulled it back, obviously the nose came up, push it down, the nose went down. The simple rudiments of flying, that's all that was. It was only half an hour. Then after that, you got down to the serious business of learning how to operate the controls yourself.
Yeah. We're interested in this. I know it's written down in places, but we are. I mean, what do you, in as much detail as you like, How did they train you on the dual flights, you know, dual training
flights? Well, you went through for set exercises, like taking off and then leaving the circuit, doing medium turns, steep turns, climbing turns, descending turns, and aspects of general flying, how to actually fly the aeroplane.